This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. On the program today, our monthly look at computers. We welcome back to the program Greg Klein. He's on the Science and Technology beat at the News Gazette. Greg also writes a couple of columns for the newspaper about computing. They run on Mondays in the Circuits section of the paper. Computers and You, a topic we take up once a month on the third Monday of the month. If you've got a question about computers, give us a call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Welcome back, Greg.
Thanks, Celeste. It's good to be here.
Nice to see you. Well, we're here at the holiday season. What are the hot tech toys this year?
You mean other than a Nintendo Wii?
There's got to be other stuff out there. Well, we've got GPS devices seem to be very hot. The paper yesterday was loaded with advertisements for that kind of a toy. What else is out there that's hot this season?
Well, I think pocket GPS devices in particular are a big thing people are buying this year, and probably because they've reached kind of that sweet spot in price, and it's an interesting thing to get, you know, and play around with. Another thing that really is kind of hard to find right now is kind of a new generation of inexpensive and small Linux running laptops. Most notably is the EPC, that's three E's, EEE, and PC. Which is made by a company called Asus. Now, you may not have ever heard of them, but you might well have used their products because they make something called motherboards. They're a big manufacturer of motherboards, which are really kind of the central insides of your computer where the chip and the memory and all that stuff attaches. So that thing that's kind of inside maybe your desktop machine or your laptop. But they started making this little low-cost Linux-running laptop, and those things are flying off the shelves. And that has prompted other companies to start working on these as well. And I think we're going to see in the first part of next year, we're going to see a big collection of these that people will have a choice of. You know, and at a couple hundred bucks to around $500, they're quite functional and not overly expensive.
Yeah, how big are they?
Well, this the EPC has a 7-inch screen, so if you could think of it in terms of not much larger than a small hardback book, that's about what you're looking at. It weighs a little less than a couple pounds or around a couple pounds. Easy to hold even in one hand. From what I can tell, for folks like me with fading eyes, middle-aged eyes,
yes.
They might be a struggle, although in the case of the EPC, the resolution they've set the screen at is such that somebody like me with bifocals could see it, right?
Yeah, so you can't adjust it then. I mean, you can't adjust the...
Yeah, usually in laptop screens, it's hard to adjust the resolution because those screens have either a single or a dual resolution that they want to be set at. So you can't really change that. Although there are ways around that limitation, but just generally, it's what you see is what you get.
Yeah.
So, but they've done a pretty good job, I think, with that. The keyboard, I think, is the other thing with that particular machine that might be an issue with some people. You know, when you think of a laptop not much bigger than a small hardback book, okay,
mm-hmm.
with a 7-inch screen and probably about a 7-inch or 8-inch keyboard, right?
Yeah.
That's not a lot of real estate there. And I think if you touch type, it'd probably be – and you have big fingers.
Yeah.
It might be a little bit challenging for you.
So you'd be doing the –
Yeah. If you're a hunt and pecker, I think you'd be good.
Or if you're a good texter.
Right.
You got
right.
those thumbs going.
Right, yeah, if you
and
can get those thumbs working.
There's some people I am amazed. They can take that telephone and, man, they're going.
But I think that there are three things that are interesting about this kind of movement now that's begun. It really kind of began with something called One Laptop Per Child. I don't know how much people are aware of that, but it's a kind of a movement or an idea being run by out of MIT by a guy named Nicholas Negroponte, who's kind of a longtime technology thinker, and his idea was to make a laptop that's built for kids, costs $100, so that any kid in the world can be supplied with these laptops to learn computer technology. Well, it ended up costing, $199, not $100. But it's an interesting machine, and it's kind of the form factor that now these commercial machines we're seeing come out are. And I think a lot of people, when they came out with that machine in the fall, the One Laptop Per Child machine, there was a lot of interest in it beyond the idea of, supplying kids around the world with laptops. And so commercial companies like ASUS saw this and said, hey, there may be a market for this. So now what you've got is it's not big. It's light. It's got pretty good battery life. It runs a version of Linux tailored to the machine. So you're not, saddled with maybe the problems or the expense of Windows or Mac OS X. And it's not a machine for playing games or editing video or anything like that, but it's fully capable of doing all your internet stuff, email, web surfing, instant messaging, and, light to medium duty office work. Yeah. So it's kind of interesting.
And at $200.
And the price is right.
Yeah. Speaking of sweet spots, that's pretty sweet. When you were talking about laptop and these sub-notebook resolution, I thought it was interesting. Today I looked, I was wondering how the Kindle ebook reader is doing, and Amazon is currently saying they're out of them at the moment.
Right.
And but it was interesting that on that device you can go from 10-point type, let's say, to 12 or 14.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I wonder if some of these other devices eventually you'll be able to.
Oh, you can do that.
Now, oh, you can do that.
Although,
okay.
Although you might have the screen resolution set at one or two levels, because that's what the screens and laptops typically, or your flat panel desktop monitors are typically built for. You can always pump up the point size of the type and help yourself that way. Yeah. When I said there are ways around that, that's one of the ways I had in mind. Most machines also include various kinds of software that are aimed maybe at people with disabilities who maybe have, severe reading problems, problems with their eyes. But you could use it as well, to blow up type and pictures and other stuff you're looking at when you think it's too small on the screen there. You get into not having enough real estate maybe to see the whole thing and having to scroll around, but that's certainly something you could do. Yeah, and Kindle is the other thing I would say that is like the hot item for the holiday season here. Probably Wii, Kindle, and the EPC are the three big techie items that really are doing a big business.
Let's take some calls now.
All right.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Greg Klein of the News Gazette is with us this afternoon. Computers and You. This is a topic we take up once a month on the third Monday of the month. And we've got some listeners who have called in now. Let's go first to a listener in Chicago on line 4. Hi.
Hello. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Season's greetings. I have about 4 questions. You can dump me as whenever you're ready. First, I'd like to comment on One Laptop Per Child. I did order. They have a program called Give One, Get One. And it's about $400 plus tax. The nice thing about it is that we sponsor 2 girls in Kenya secondary school, and next time we go there, we're going to bring a couple of them to these girls. The first one you buy just goes to, some country where the program is running. But when I get ours, I will load it up with, IBM now has a suite that runs on Linux.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a great thing, and I urge everyone to do that. $400, 2 computers, 1 to a child somewhere, and you get one.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's another thing. If you're interested in one of these small laptops we were talking about, one of the things you can do is, as the caller said, they have a buy one, get one program with One Laptop Per Child, where for $400. Essentially, you're donating one laptop, and then they'll send you one.
Right.
To play
do whatever you want with it. And it's very easy to get to. It's simply laptop.org.
Right.
Okay, my question. When I go to Africa, I bring a very small computer. It's light, and the sole purpose is to download pictures. I take hundreds of pictures. And every time I put in my the card from my camera, it says there's no device there. Well, the last time I was there and this happened, I really panicked because I would be out of business. But I discovered that by going to Device Manager, I could restart it. And I can't figure out why every time I turn the computer on, it's turned off, and I have to restart it every time. How does that happen?
All right. Now, so you take the card out of your camera, right?
Correct.
And do you put it in a slot on your computer?
Correct.
Okay. So you got a laptop that's got a card reading slot in it.
Right.
And what kind of card are you using?
Oh, it's a 1 meg card. I don't know. What is it called?
Compact flash?
Yeah, I think it's compact.
Is it kind of larger and square than some cards or smaller and more rectangular?
Yeah, smaller and rectangular.
It's probably a secure digital card.
That's it. SD card.
Yeah. And so you slide it in your computer, and your computer tells you it's not there.
Yes.
But you eventually get the computer to recognize it by restarting.
No. I go through the steps. I go Start Control Panel System, Hardware Device Manager.
Mm-hmm.
Then I scroll down to whatever the device manager is. I can't remember offhand, PC something or other, MCI or something. And I find the device, and it says it's not running. So I start it and go back to the card, and it recognizes it.
Mm-hmm. So evidently you're putting it in that card slot, that little card drive, and that card drive is not active for
some reason.
And when you look at it in Device Manager, is there any setting that you can lock in there?
Well, yeah. I mean,
So you think you're doing it, but then it just doesn't. It doesn't come back on. Yeah, yeah.
I think I'm doing it now. So to refresh my memory, I think it says. Oh, yeah, I mean, I'm looking at it now, and it says, click enable device to enable the device.
Yeah.
As we speak, it's not running. So I click enable device, and then it'll read the card. But I have to do that every single time I put the card in.
Right. Well, I think the place to start on something like this is to, in essence, reinstall that card reader. Okay. You might want to, you might want to use your system information and see what kind of card reader it is and see if there's maybe an updated driver for that piece of software that makes the thing run with Windows.
Okay.
And try installing that. What version of Windows are you running?
XP.
XP and
Home Edition.
And Service Pack 2?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And so is it upgraded, completely upgraded?
As far as I know. I mean, I do automatic updates.
So it should be. Yeah.
Should be, yeah.
It may be, and when you got this, did it have a SP, like XP SP1 on it?
I think it was already upgraded to SP2.
Did that card reader ever work like, it should?
Yeah. When I first cut it, I would just pop it in, they'd recognize it, I'd download them.
I'd have to think that somewhere along the way, there's been an update to your system, and this would be a logical thing. So the card reader has kind of, gotten askew of that, and maybe you either need to reinstall that card reader or find out if there's a more current driver and install that.
All right, so it says it's a Texas Instruments something or other. I should go to that site.
You might go to their site and see, search on that particular model and see if there's anything like that. And is this built in?
I'm sorry, the reader?
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so it came in the computer as a slot.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I might take a look at Texas Instruments there and see what they have for drivers for that okay. particular thing. Or, you know, just try reinstalling it through Windows.
Yeah. So. Do I first uninstall it and then reinstall it? Is that...
That wouldn't hurt.
Yeah.
Okay. Always a good procedure.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
You're welcome. Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. In terms of screens, you were talking about in terms of reading and all that kind of thing, is the Apple a better screen than the other ones, or is there any difference in them or not?
No.
Oh, there is?
You know, the dirty little secret is that... all those screens are made by like one or two companies anyway, right? So everybody's is pretty much the same. Now, you know, there are screens and there are screens. So there are different types and there are types that are backlit differently than other types. And there are types that, you know, use different kinds of electronics in what they do.
You know, some of the other ones a few years back, you know, in terms of, sort of hard on the eyes and some...
Yeah.
You know, is there any, then, you know, what I should look for in terms of innovations or?
Well, I think that right now, okay, and this will change as computer technology always does. This will probably change tomorrow. But you know, right now I like screens, flat panel screens that are backlit by LEDs, light emitting diodes, right?
Okay.
And that's kind of the thing that most people are going to. At this point, but again, you know, I think it's when I talk to people about monitors, for example, and the same thing goes. I think if you're going to be buying a laptop, I always say, "Look, go see it." You know, preferably see it side by side with others. You know, other monitors. If you're buying a monitor and other laptops, if you're buying a laptop that are running, right?
Okay.
And the reason I say that is. You know, there's not a lot of difference in the technology from one screen to another, but you know, there are differences in the way they look, and that visual preference is a, you know, kind of a personal thing. So I think you're better off comparing them side by side to see, oh, I like this, I like that. You know, I've purchased monitors in the past, and I usually go and compare them when I purchase them, and it's weird. You know, you can look at the same two screens side by side, same technology, right? But they look different for some reason.
Well, it's like
and
a big
my eyes
of,
tell me I like this one and I don't like that one. So you're better off looking at them in person.
Yeah,
and,
it's like that big wall of television sets. At
right,
the,
right.
Store.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of, you mentioned what Linux, which I'm not really familiar with. I've heard a little bit about it, but yeah, will the screens get... you know, wider in those or not, or do you think, or what's happened there?
I don't, Linux is the operating system, right?
Oh, it's after operating system.
So, yeah, it doesn't affect
the advantage. What's the advantage of that then?
Well, I don't know whether I'm set to say that there's any huge advantage in it, okay? It's more secure than Windows.
Mm-hmm.
And so is Mac OS X for that matter. And there are reasons for that, and you know, people debate them at length. But you know, it's just a simple fact that there aren't as many viruses, spyware, adware for Linux and Mac OS X as there are for Windows. So
okay.
that to me is the major advantage to people. The disadvantage is that Windows or Linux to this point has been you know, kind of a techno geek's paradise, right?
Oh, okay.
It wasn't really meant for. Regular old folks like you and me, okay? Now, that's changed recently. You know, I've been trying this year working with a system called Ubuntu that's aimed at making Linux a viable kind of, you know, regular market product. And I think they do a pretty good job at it. There aren't the administrative hassles or the setup hassles that have existed in the several previous versions of Linux that I've played around with. So, and then, you know, in these machines we were talking about, the EEPC and One Laptop Per Child and some of the others that are coming down the road here, what they've done is they've, because Linux is, quote, open source, unquote, software, meaning anybody can get down in there and modify it, right? Mm-hmm. As long as they make those modifications, that's what the deal is supposed to be, make those modifications available to anybody else. You can customize it. So what they've done in EPC and in One Laptop Per Child is really customize the face that you get of Linux, as well as customize the ease of administrating it. So you get a lot different experience than you might get if you were using a straight Linux distribution that you downloaded off the internet or something like that.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Next, we go to line 3, Urbana.
Buy a laptop for a professional musician who writes her score in the computer and wants to hook it up to an 8-octave keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
What do I buy? Top of the line, middle of the line.
So you want to buy a laptop for a musician who's going to use it for scoring as well as the other things,
right?
That
well, she has
do.
A desktop already, but
what kind of desktop does she have?
I think it's a Windows XP.
All right, and has she used that for a long time?
I think so. It's not new.
Is she satisfied with that?
Pardon me?
Is she satisfied with that?
Probably not. Probably won't. She probably wants better and better equipment.
All right. Well, let me tell you, the professional musicians that I know who are, avid computer users,
they
all use Apple Macintosh computers, not Windows.
The number on Apple what? What number?
Well, if you're talking a laptop, then you'd want to get her what they're calling now. We used to be called a PowerBook, but now they're calling a MacBook Pro. Okay, that's their upper level laptop.
MacBook Pro.
So if she's a professional musician and she's really going to be pushing this stuff, that's probably, and you want to get her a laptop, that's probably what you want to think about.
Now,
right?
Can the stuff that's processed on this Apple be used in her desktop, which is probably not Apple, but
that's now you're getting into the reservations I was going to add to what I just told you. Okay, she uses Windows,
yes,
and is familiar with Windows, and getting a Mac is going to make her have to change some of her habits, right? So there's that learning curve you might want to think about. And for that reason, although, the professional musicians I know use Macs, you could certainly do the same thing with Windows. And because she's familiar with Windows and already has a Windows desktop, particularly if she wants to keep that desktop and keep using it, you might be better off getting her a higher-end Windows laptop than getting her a Mac.
And,
so she doesn't have to relearn what she does, and she can keep using her desktop machine.
Would a Dell do or what?
Well, yeah, I'm not so much concerned about the brand. I always tell people, look, you're probably better off buying a name brand, right?
Yeah.
So you can think of what the name brands are. And then for something like what she wants to do, instead of buying on the lower end of the scale or even maybe in the middle end of the scale, you want to buy on the upper end of the scale.
And what are the prices of these upper end things?
Well, it depends on whose machine and what model, but I think you can get a pretty darn beefy laptop for $1,800 to $2,000 now.
Okay.
So the important thing to think of is she's going to get it. It's going to be you're getting a Windows laptop, okay? You can still get Windows XP. In fact, Microsoft is a little dismayed that they're having a hard time weaning people away from Windows XP. But their current system is Windows Vista. And Windows Vista is a nice operating system. Okay, it's new, so it's got some things that need to be smoothed out. But one of the things about it that that's important for people to consider, and I think this is like maybe the number one thing to think about when you're if you're buying that laptop, is that it wants a lot of memory. Okay,
yeah.
Random access memory, or what's commonly referred to as RAM. Probably if you're going to buy a higher-end Windows laptop, it's going to have – the RAM is measured in gigabytes, okay?
Yeah.
It's going to have 2 gigabytes in it, and that's the bottom line that you want for Vista if you're going to run Vista. You need to have 2 gigabytes of RAM in there, and it wouldn't be unwise to even put more in considering the kind of stuff she's going to be doing with it.
Right.
So 3 or 4, but 2's good.
Yeah. Okay.
Then you want to think in terms of hard drive space. You said she'll be scoring and that kind of thing.
Right.
I assume she'll also be doing some, digital music files.
Right.
Which can get pretty hefty. So you want to think in terms of how big that hard drive is. A lot of upper end laptops now, they go 160 gigabytes, 200 gigabytes, 250 gigabytes. That's what I'd think in terms of. More is better there. So the more RAM, the better. The more hard drive space, the better. And those would probably be the two things you'd really want to pay attention to. And then anything else, whatever else is in the machine, will probably be sufficient for what she wants to do. Mm-hmm. Any high-end laptop you're going to buy, you want to think about the RAM and the hard drive space, but it's going to have a drive that at least reads and writes CDs and reads DVDs, and probably a drive that reads and writes CDs and reads and writes DVDs. So you want that. It's going to have wireless capability. Those things are going to be built in. It's going to have a good processor. A lot of people get hung up on processors when they're buying a new computer, and I think that's not really necessary anymore, because the processors, which is kind of the brain of the computer, even in the lower-end models now, are plenty capable of doing just about anything except maybe for cutting-edge gaming, which, sad to say, depending on your perspective, is the most demanding thing that people do with computers these days. So, that's not so much to get hung up on. In her case, I think, the RAM and the hard drive space would be the two things you'd want to think about particularly.
So 2 gigabytes on the RAM and 160
Well, I said 160. A lot of people sell machines, laptops with 160, but if I can get more, I want more, right?
Okay.
So if I can get 200 or 250, I'm plenty happy to have it.
Okay.
I wouldn't go any lower than 160.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
You're very welcome. Excuse me. Next, we take a call from a listener in Urbana, line 2. Hi.
Hi. My hubby likes using a Palm Pilot personal digital assistant, a PDA.
Uh-huh.
And he discovered a neat piece of software that you can get for 2 prices, the cheaper prices through the Orbis catalog. It's called Handheld Birds. And we're not super avid birders or experienced, but we do like to know what it is we're seeing when we see bad things. So you can do a search entering options like where you're located, the kind of habitat, and you can enter different colors, and you can enter approximate size, not in inches, but is it smaller than a sparrow? Is it about the size of a crow, about the size of a robin, bigger than a goose, that kind of thing. It gives you those options you can check. And then it will show habitat. Then it will show you what your options are, a list, and then you click on those things, and it'll show you pictures.
Uh-huh.
And it will also, you can also have the option of hearing what the bird what sounds the bird makes. So some birds have a song and an alarm call. A woodpecker has a particular drumming sound in addition to its call. So you can hear what the bird sounds like as well, which can be one of the ways to identify it. And I said to my husband, I don't think of you as somebody who's that interested in birds. He said, I'm practicing for retirement. It's a pretty pretty neat little thing. And if you carry it around with you, you can actually check when you see something. If you're somebody who carries one of these things in your pocket all the time. So I wanted to suggest that. We got the he got the software through the Orvis catalog, O-R-V-I-S. It's a National Geographic piece of software. But if you go through them, it's a lot more expensive.
Yeah, and if you want to read about it, you just type in handheldbirds, oneword.com, and you can read about it. Evidently, it has 867 North American birds in it. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's a nice little thing. I think it's $109.
be handy for the upcoming Christmas bird count.
Wow. yeah, absolutely.
Interesting, yeah. Okay, that's my little contribution.
Thanks for the call.
All right, bye.
Let's take another call now. A listener in Ashmore on line one. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Good. Listen, I have, a simple question. I use Yahoo as my search engine and also as my homepage, and it used to be up in the right-hand corner at the top. You had you could put it down on the taskbar, you could minimize it, or get rid of it by Xing it out. And now something has come into the Yahoo somewhere, and I can't minimize it anymore, and I wondered if you had an answer.
And, sir, you want to what is it you want to minimize, the Windows taskbar or something
in Yahoo? I'm looking at Yahoo, and I brought an email up, and I decide that I want to now bring up I want to bring up another on my viewer and screen, and I want to put this into another a document or something. And so I want to minimize them both so I can work on one screen with it.
So you want to minimize the email that you're looking at.
Right. And it won't let me do it anymore. Hmm. And I have two computers, and if I'm updated, now they both neither will do that. And it's so nice when I'm working on things, it doesn't make many things, where I want to run two screens and minimize them both and then work between them.
Right. So I'm looking at... I'm looking at this. So you used to be able to. All right.
As Greg wins his way through the computer in the studio, let me reintroduce the program. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Greg Klein. He's with the News Gazette, and he joins us every other month on the third Monday of the month to talk about computers. This is a topic we take up every month, once a month on the third Monday of the month. And Greg and Peter Klein go back and forth, trading off one month to the next. Computers, our topic this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine.
All right, sir, I think I have at least a quick and dirty solution for you, okay?
Okay.
So you open up your inbox, and now you got your list of messages, right?
Right.
And I think if you right-click on a message that you want to open,
You'll
get a menu. And one of the choices in that menu should be open in a new window.
Uh-huh.
And if you make that selection, it'll open that message in a new window.
Okay.
And then you can, just in the standard way, minimize that window and any other window you open up that way into your taskbar.
Okay. I'll try that.
Okay.
Thank you much.
All right.
You're very
Bye.
Welcome. Next, we talk with a listener in Kankakee on line four. Hi.
Howdy. I was just enjoying listening to that. What a wonderful gift that gentleman's going to give the musician, the laptop. But I just had to call in to say that I would suggest to him to talk to the person, the musician, and ask her what kind of laptop she wants. Because if we're talking a professional situation, I suspect she's probably got an idea of just what she would really like. And if you're going to lay down that kind of money, you might as well get what's going to be needed and used for years.
Right. Yours is a good suggestion.
That's what I wanted to toss into the whole mix there. Thank you so
Thank
much.
You.
I'm sure enjoy the show.
Thanks for the call. Next, we talk with a listener on campus, line two. Hi.
Hi. I recently added two new programs to my computer, and I think that's the only thing I've changed. And ever since then, it takes like 5 minutes to boot up, and I can't figure out how to fix things so that it's happy again and boots up in the usual slow time that Windows does.
What were the programs you added?
Dreamweaver and Adobe, the latest versions.
So, and you didn't have this problem before, right?
No.
So clearly Dreamweaver and Adobe Acrobat?
Yeah.
Yeah, are loading things at startup, okay? That's why it's taking a long time.
Okay.
So when you installed those, they set themselves up to load at startup. Now, the question is whether you want them to do that or not.
No.
You know, if there's something you use all the time, maybe you do want them to do
that. Well, Adobe I do use all the time, but I don't necessarily have to have them open during the startup procedure.
Yeah. So probably this would be the easy solution to try first that I'd suggest to you. Okay. So do you use Windows XP?
Yeah.
Yeah. So go to, your start menu and bring up run, you know, and you'll get the run box and type msconfig, C-O-N-F-I-G, in there.
C-O-N-F-I-G.
Msconfig. And, hit return or okay. And that'll bring up the system the system management utility,
right.
Okay?
I
system
got it.
Configuration utility. And there's a tab on there that says startup, okay?
Okay.
And if you click that tab, you'll get a list of all the things that start up when your computer starts up.
Okay.
And that list, each item has a little checkbox off to the left of it.
Yeah.
And if you uncheck that box and tell the computer it's okay, then that won't start up anymore.
Okay.
With your computer. So that may solve your problem there. If that doesn't solve the problem, you may have to go a little deeper. But try that first.
Well, I see something called Adobe Gamma Loader and Acro today.
Yeah, yeah. See, these are all those are all likely candidates.
Okay.
So I bet you got some Dreamweaver stuff in there too. The problem with that list is that it can be
it's hard to identify.
Yes, that's right. The names on there can be kind of cryptic. Now, if you look at the columns, you know, there's information about where those pieces of software are located and that kind of thing, and you can often kind of ferret out what program that belongs to by looking at that information.
Okay.
And do you live here in town?
Yeah.
Now, if you look at those columns and you can't ferret that information out, go to your newsstand and buy a paper.
Okay.
Because today in my column, I talk about some websites that help you identify those cryptic things on your startup list. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
You're very welcome. Other questions are invited this afternoon. We've got about, six, 7 minutes left in this portion of the program. If you've got a question about computers, give us a call. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. No one waiting for us at the moment. Is there anything you wanted to mention or to add? If not, I have a question for you.
Well, yeah, I thought we've kind of covered some of the hot devices this Christmas, and we could talk about digital music players, but there's probably not much reason to do that because what's everybody buying iPods, So, although there are alternatives, I might add.
Well, there's something called an iPod, and then there's an iPod Touch or an iPod Touches.
Uh huh. Well, if you know what the iPhone is. And it's got its touchscreen interface. Mm-hmm. The iPod Touch is just an iPod with that touchscreen interface instead of the usual iPod click wheel and that kind of thing. So it's kind of and it also has Wi-Fi and a web browser, so you can use it at Wi-Fi hotspots and even download music with it at Starbucks. The other thing I think a lot of people are probably, think about at Christmas is a camera. A digital camera, and I thought I might just touch on that briefly, although there are people far more qualified to do so. But one of the things I was having a conversation with somebody about recently and doing a little reading and that I thought was an interesting point is, I tell people when they're buying a computer now, don't get hung up on the processor speed, because even the slowest processor is fast enough to do everything that you want to do unless you're a cutting-edge gamer or a video editor, right? So not something you should worry about. And I might say the same kind of thing. The point that I was considering this week was I might say the same kind of thing with cameras now, digital cameras, still cameras I'm talking about in particular now. Because, you know, it used to be that what you got hung up on was megapixels, because you wanted enough megapixels to, you know, make 4x5s or 5x7s or 8x10s. And the fact is now, you know, most digital cameras are getting up into a range that you can make anything but posters with just about any digital camera. So you shouldn't, just like not getting hung up on the processor speed and buying a computer, I don't think anymore you do yourself a favor by getting hung up on the megapixel count when you're buying a digital camera, particularly when it gets, you know, up over 5, 6, 7, 8. You know, you probably don't need to worry so much about that, and you ought to think about some of the other things, like what kind of zoom function does it have? You know, does it have an optical zoom, meaning it does it mechanically, which is more accurate than digital zoom, which is kind of, you know, dithering with the computer tricks. So maybe you want to think about getting one with optical zoom. Maybe you want to think more about the low light settings and whether there's image stabilization so that it, you know, takes your shakes out of the picture when you're taking a picture. Or maybe you want to think about a couple of even more important things, which are the battery life, because the thing's no good to you if it's out of juice, and how big it is. I always tell people, you know, there may be places where size doesn't matter, but in digital cameras, particularly, you know, if you're not a pro, you're just, you know, a normal person that wants to take pictures of the cocktail party or your kid's birthday or whatever, you know, digital cameras, size matters, because if it's too big and clunky, you're not going to have it with you.
Yeah.
But if it's nice and compact, you know, you may have it in your pocket to catch that shot of a lifetime.
Yeah. So. Let's take another call. A listener in Bloomington, line 4. Hi.
Howdy.
Hi.
Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I have I love your show to begin with, but I've ignored part of what you've said over the last months because we live out in the country. We didn't have DSL available to us. So if you've talked about this in the past, I apologize. But basically, we now have DSL available, and I'd like to set up a wireless hub of some kind in my house. So I walked into the electronics store the other day and looked at wireless routers, and holy mackerel. You know, they were talking about G-band, N-band, 802-point, something or other. Is there some way you can make it, you know, pretty easy for me?
Well, they're all the same standard, okay? It's 802.11 is the, you know, formal name, commonly called Wi-Fi, right? So even though there's a raft of choices when you go in there, the fact is they all work pretty much the same, right?
Okay.
The one thing that somebody probably talked to you about, or that caught your eye when you were looking at these things, is the difference between what's 802.11g versus 802.11n. Okay,
right.
And the difference is speed. All right.
Okay.
The n moves data faster than g does. Okay. Here's the problem, though. Right now, there's no standard for n. They're still working on it. It hasn't been settled, so there are various iterations of it. And it may be that, you know, the N in whatever computer you have won't work with the N you buy as a router, right?
Okay.
So you're safer with G, because G is a settled standard. The G in your laptop is likely to work with the G in your router. And, they'll communicate with each other copacetically.
Okay.
But basically, it's speed. And frankly, G is plenty fast for just about anything but moving live video, okay? So if you're not going to be streaming video from one device to the other.
Yeah, compared to my 28.8 dial-up.
Right. And I'm not talking about web video either. I mean, I'm talking about, you know, TV shows or movies or whatever.
Okay.
You'll be fine with web video. Just get a router that's 802.11g compatible, and you should be good.
Any recommendation on brand?
I think it's
Netgear
pretty.
And
it's
D-Link.
Any of those. I think it's pretty much 6-1, half a dozen of the other.
Okay.
Again, you know, it's kind of like I said about screens. you know, there are only a few companies that make these things anyway, so
sure.
They may rebrand them, but the same stuff is inside.
Sure. Okay. One more quick question. The DSL company is going to provide some kind of a access point.
Uh-huh.
And then I plug my wireless router into that.
Yeah. Assuming, make sure. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Do I need something else to attach to my laptop? Both my wife and I have, you know, pretty new laptops. You're too old at the most. So.
Yeah, I assume, and you know, you'll want to check on this, but if they're a year or two old at the most, I assume they both are Wi-Fi capable.
Yeah, they both
and
are.
And they're undoubtedly 802.11g capable.
Okay.
So, no, you shouldn't. That's internal to your laptop, so all you're going to have to do is, you get the node, the router that the DSL company gives you, and you plug an Ethernet cable from that into your wireless router, and then your wireless router broadcasts a signal that your laptops pick up and use.
Great.
All right.
And I appreciate
the one thing to make sure of is that the DSL company is not providing you with a node or router that is also wireless. So then maybe you don't even need another one, you know.
Sure, so. That'd be great. Okay. Thanks very much.
Okay, you're very welcome. Thanks for the call. Thanks to everyone who called this afternoon. And Greg, thank you for joining us once again.
All right, it was my pleasure.
Okay, Mr. Greg, we'll see you in February.
Yeah.
How about that? Peter Klein will be with us next month, January 2008. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year to everybody out there.
Greg Klein is science and technology reporter for the News Gazette. Computers and You, a topic we take up once a month here on the Afternoon Magazine on the third Monday of the month.